He's gonna have his bisexual awakening.
He loves both of them.
Beer time,
Friday night.
I'm trying to get the effect of it.
Mary's trying to open a beer.
Yeah, I can't even, like, oh, do you get it?
I got it.
Oh, cheers.
Sponsored by Redacted. Cheers.
Cheers. This week on Life of Bi, this week we've been watching Heartstopper.
Yeah, we've become mildly obsessed with Heartstopper.
Thanks to a Patreon, actually.
Yeah, it was recommended to us by a Patreon. Oh. It was a great shout because we were very excited to learn that there's a bisexual character in it.
Yeah.
In fact, we were so excited, we made a lot of really strange noises. Said welcome to Life of Bi.
No. Okay, let's do it properly.
So welcome to Life of Bi,
episode 11.
This episode is about bisexual men.
Yeah,
because
we're not. And we thought that was probably a missing ingredient in our coverage of bisexuality so far.
Yeah, I think that because we are people of the AFAB
community. Do we have a community?
I think we do.
Forced community.
We tend to always look at things with a specific lens. Like last week,
month,
we spoke about femaleness quite a lot. That's how we ended the episode.
Uh-huh.
And now I think we should just look at everything from another perspective.
Yeah, because we know it's different from, like, anecdotally, I know it's different being a bisexual man. A Heartstopper, actually, very as cute as it was, is not the best jumping off point in many ways for discussion, because that is basically what it is, and it's just cute. So for those who don't know, Heartstopper is on Netflix. It's like it's based on a
young adult graphic novel.
Thank you. About a sweet boy called Charlie who is out, who falls in love with a hot rugby boy who is not out and supposedly not gay, but obviously he is a bit gay, because that's where the story goes.
And I must admit, I thought that bisexuality, after being recommended it as a series, I thought bisexuality might play a bit more of a role.
Yeah, I think I actually got a bit of a, yeah, it didn't get as much of a look in. And it's very innocent, and a lot of the problems are fairly easily resolved.
We found ourselves wondering, what's it really like being a bi man?
We, any excuse to download a dating app, to be honest. We downloaded Grindr, which is aesthetically, like, trying quite hard to be...
It looks a lot like Pornhub.
It looks a lot like Pornhub. A black and yellow aesthetic. Which,
like a wasp.
Yeah.
It's a bit scary.
And the... there was lots about it we were surprised by, like the grid of pictures, like on Instagram, and the fact that you can only see, you can then do the swipey thing, but the first thing you see is like a little grid of people to choose from, and obviously it's done on distance.
And some of the stuff is quite helpful because it means it was quite easy to filter people down into bisexual people.
Yeah.
And through that process, we sent out some messages.
We also got a lot of dick pics.
We got a lot of dick pics.
We actually got quite good at deleting them before we even looked at them. Yeah, if it was like, you know, anonymous man has sent 12 pictures, you're like, no.
I'm not going to risk that.
I just don't want to see it.
I felt bad because we downloaded it on Mary's phone and Mary works at a school. And I think you got to be pretty careful about what you're opening.
Yeah, I was getting notifications from Grindr being like, that can't be seen. That can't be seen. Anyway, we did actually find two people to talk to. We're calling them Octavian and Dee.
Now, neither of these are their real names. And actually, Dee's parts are going to be spoken by an actor.
Here's Octavian.
Oh, my God. So before November, I used to identify as straight, to be fair. So I came out like as bisexual in November. But there were reactions from people saying that, oh, you're either confused, oh, I need to do something like so I can turn you totally gay, or you have not met the right person in your life yet.
So Octavian is in his 20s and he's pretty new to the London queer scene and he doesn't seem fully on board with it.
No, he's come across some pretty retentive and emotionally uncooperative Londoners, I think, which is definitely not Octavian's vibe.
When I date someone, I like being truthful, like, to myself, and just I say what are my red flags. So for example, don't lie to me, I want to be straightforward to you, like, and just because I feel like if you start like with hidden truths and stuff, it's gonna come out and roll out at some moment and things are not gonna be fine.
So your current relationship, is it I'm assuming it's not monogamous if you're on Grindr. Do you see other people still?
So I'm a little bit ashamed of that because we said from the first time to be exclusive. But normally, I'm a person who's 96% of the time horny.
Grindr, for those who've never used it, is very well set up for people like Octavian who might be shopping around while in relationships that were previously arranged to be exclusive. But it's got lots of privacy settings so that you can work around that.
So, for example, you can change the icon on your phone so the app doesn't look like the app.
Yeah, although I question the necessariness of that because I'm like, if your girlfriend, if that's what it is, they're not going to know what the Grindr icon looks like, right? Yeah. Although I will say it is pretty marked. It's that sort of mask shape. It does look a bit kinky, I'd say.
And they do, like Mary said, cater for people who want to be on the down low. Shout out to an episode in season one that you can revisit for more info on that.
Episode three.
And there's even a tribe for people who don't want anyone to know that they're on Grindr.
Oh, there we go. Discreet. That basically means we're probably all cheating and I don't want to get caught.
This is Dee, or Dee's words. They're a fair bit older than Octavian.
They talked us through some of the tribes on Grindr. So they're groups where you can identify your type to people.
It's a bit like those coloured handkerchiefs that the gay community used to use to identify like what you're into, like yellow for piss, you know, right pocket, left pocket.
Yeah.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, definitely Google it.
I think I put myself down as otter, which is really more a physicality type. If you go to like leathers or bears, these tend to be the gay men and they are gay and they're not down the line. But if you go for the discreet one, they tend to be married men to women, and they are bi, and they are fulfilling a need.
So we'll hear more from Dee later on how they navigate being discreet on Grindr and in the real world. But first, we wanted to know how gay men on the app react to them being bi.
There's equally as many gay men who will just go, bi is just a halfway thing, just be yourself. The gay community still carries the baggage of shame. And if you don't say you're gay, if you show an interest in women still, it looks like you're in a closet, that there's still shame. And shame is really deep.
I think it just often does feel a little bit like people think that you've only got like one foot in that world.
That's Matthew. We didn't actually find him on Grindr. He's a friend of ours.
But I've literally heard people say like, you know, you're just, it's just that you're not comfortable with like defining as gay. And I'm like, guys, I still like will suck a dick. Like, I'm like, what difference does it make?
Yeah.
You know, it's what, like, it's, if I was really that ashamed, I wouldn't be so open about like, my life and my experiences and the people that I date and the, you know, the people I've been with, the guys that, you know, the guys that I've had sex with. I don't know. I think part of it might be because, like, I guess the whole thing about being queer is like rejecting kind of like heteronormativity and the those constructs and everything. And I think sometimes it can feel like anything which like alludes to it even can feel like a bit like it jars almost.
Relevant cultural moment of the week.
Month, El.
Oh, fuck. I'm trying to bring it in.
El's insisting, yeah. I think you love a sting, don't you?
I love it.
You don't. You clearly don't feel like you feature enough in this podcast. you want some more singing opportunities.
Yeah, yeah.
This next bit, we're going to be talking about, relevant cultural moments of the week about bisexuality, because we were thinking about bisexual men and how they're presented in the media and in art. And so we've already given you Heartstopper, which is delightful, but not much juice in it. Now we're bringing to you some cold, hard West End gold, which we couldn't afford to see. Cock, which is Mike Bartlett play starring Jonathan Bailey, that dude from
Bridgerton,
and I actually don't know the other two.
Well, Taron Egerton was meant to be in it, but he dropped out last minute. And some people are saying that the tickets are so expensive because they did have a cast of stars.
£400 some of them were.
Yeah.
Supposedly dynamic seating, but I just think that's outrageous.
It's
but if a bisexual can't afford to see a play about bisexuality, then you fucked it. Yeah. I mean, I read it for this.
Yeah.
And
I didn't.
It's not a bad play. Mike Bartlett is like a very good playwright.
Will you explain to the listener what it's
what
about?
What it is. Cock follows a central main character who we keep talking about as bi, but that really isn't clarified at all. He's a guy in a gay relationship. He's been in a gay relationship for a long time. It's not a particularly healthy gay relationship. I would say it's actually pretty toxic.
Mm.
And they break up at the beginning of the play, and then John goes off and meets this woman that he sees on the way to work, and they start having an affair. And then for some reason, they all have dinner together to decide what John's going to do. And
such an unhinged way to like sort anything out.
I really can't remember how that is actually organised, because that's one of those mental plot jumps in order to bring everyone together in a dramatic way. The other thing is the dad arrives halfway through.
What dad?
The partner's dad, not John, but John's partner's dad arrives. John's presenter is quite like, he's indecisive, not sure who he is. And he came out as gay in uni, and he's never like even thought about women or wanted to be with them since. And then he discovers that he really likes it. It's meant to be a comedy.
Did you laugh?
There are bits that are funny. I think it's slightly harder reading plays to find them funny.
Fair.
Luckily,
we're about to read some out loud.
Oh, yeah. We thought, given that the tickets are so extortionate and that many of our listeners probably don't have £400 to spare, we would...
If you do, donate to our Patreon.
That we'd recreate a couple of scenes from the play. Because we're actors, normally. This is our little chance. Elle's had her sing. Now we're going to do a little bit of acting. Later there'll be a dance, which you're going to be able to see. Anyway, here is Cock, brought to you by Life of Bi.
What character are you going to play?
I think I'm in love and I need help because she's mad.
Bang! There it is! Love! Mad! She!
You can see why I'm confused.
You want help?
I just need some straightening out.
Well, sounds like you've already.
Not a joke, that wasn't a joke. I just mean, I need to know what's going on, because this woman is...
You want your boyfriend's help with the woman you're sleeping
because
with?
Because really, you're the only person. I suppose I like both, but that's okay, isn't it? That's okay.
That's okay, John. Yes, it's absolutely okay to like both.
Yes, exactly.
But not at the same time.
Bravo! Do it all again!
So what do we think, Els, from your small bit of the play there? What do we think about the representation of bisexuality? I'd say Well, no, I did just ask you the question.
Yeah,
like,
oh, yeah, you go ahead.
No, you take the floor.
Well, I'd say straight away we've got John saying, you can see why I'm confused.
Yeah.
I need some straightening out. Sounds like you've already.
Although, to be fair, Heartstopper, for which we've just sung the praises, the bisexual character says many times
how confused he is. And yeah, you know what?
Do you know what I mean? Like, it is pretty confusing.
And you know what? If it wasn't confusing, we wouldn't be doing a podcast about it, would we?
Yeah. If it wasn't confusing, it wouldn't be queer.
It's quite hard for me to say anything particularly insightful.
Yeah. without having read it.
Without having read the play.
Where's your bullshit button?
I lost it years ago.
I'd say from the sort of setup, firstly, the end of this. Obviously, mm-hmm. spoiler alert.
Oh, yes, what happens? What happens?
Well, they all have this dinner. It's obviously a catastrophe. And then it really looks like John's going to go with a woman because he's basically saying that he feels a lot happier with the woman and that the sex is better and that wow. he doesn't feel like his current partner makes him feel small. But then when it actually comes to it, he doesn't decide to leave with her. He stays very unhappily with the gay guy because he's like incapable of changing. Or he doesn't know what he is enough, or he's just never had enough of a backbone to like make a decision like that. How does it relate to our conception of bisexual men, though?
Well, I think that speaks to what our interviewees were saying about how gay men view bisexuality.
Definitely.
Sometimes.
Like he's super, the partner, the gay partner is really, they're like glimpses of misogyny and... He's like, feels like, yeah, he's really condescending about it. It's also like a comedic, farcical crisis. Mm. So I think it does definitely send up John. You feel kind of sorry for him, but also mainly it just sends up the sort of ludicrousness of people, everyone trying to like work around sexuality.
Why is his name John?
Because he's an everyman.
There aren't enough characters called John.
A crucial information, actually, this play was not written recently, or it was written recently-ish, but it's...
It was 2009.
And so it, what and might have been revolutionary at the time
yeah.
about, like, sexual fluidity sounds a bit...
Outdated.
Done, I'd
Which
say.
Which begs the question why they're reviving it now. So I guess we should look at an example that is, firstly, more recent... And then also maybe takes a different angle.
It's also no wonder she was angry. She found out you were gay after you stuck your dick in her and shot the load up. I don't know. I think I would be at least a little bit like surprised.
I feel terrible about it, but she kind of forced me, so.
Yeah. Well, you kind of had penetrative sex with someone under false pretenses, qualms. That's a bit, I don't know.
That was a clip from I May Destroy You by Michaela Cole. Which I also haven't seen. Because, frankly, I'm scared to. I tried watching the first two episodes by myself and I found it extremely triggering.
Yeah.
So really, this episode is just me being told about cultural moments by Mary. but I have now read about this specific extract.
You just shouldn't have told him.
Yeah, you know, T, I agree. Because that'd be like telling the truth, and it's much better to just hide that under the surface and never acknowledge that you are hiding something from a woman who's let you into her bedroom.
So the scene you just heard there is from episode 9 of I May Destroy You, and it's a scene between Arabella, Kwame and Tia, who are at a sort of Halloween painting workshop. Arabella is the character played by Michaela Cole, and Kwame, who's the gay character, the gay male character, is played by Papa Esiedu. And the thing they're discussing is that in a previous episode, you see Kwame go on a date with a white woman who, and they like hook up at her place, have some sex.
Harder. Harder.
He's had like, he was assaulted a couple of episodes before. He has a slight flashback while they're having sex. She's the first woman he's ever had sex with. There's a lot going on. And then afterwards, after they've shagged, she sort of shows herself to be pretty blatantly fetishizing his blackness, plays this rap song, raps along to it, and then... has her own like code name for the N-word.
Plenty of ninjas claim they're with us, what they know they're called.
What did you say? Is it ninja?
Yeah.
Nidra, it's my substitute.
And then is like horribly homophobic.
But everyone's terrified to speak. I can't even ask for a fucking fag in public without being paranoid some fucking gay guy's gonna have a seizure. How much sympathy do I actually really have with like major appropriators of female identity? I don't know.
And then he says, I'm gay to her.
I'm gay.
As a sort of counter to her homophobia.
You're joking, right?
No.
You're gay.
I'm gay.
And then she like basically chucks him out and says that he's...
Well, if you're gay, why are you on a dating app looking for... Why would you not say that you were gay? Because we shared a lot. I mean, like a lot. And you just sort of kept that bit back.
Yeah,
right?
But I wasn't even sure.
Yeah, can you leave?
She completely flips out.
Yeah, it's an awful scene. It's like absolutely gross. Her argument is like, how could you not tell me that before we slept together? But it's a really interesting example of what we've heard anecdotally from some of the bisexual men we've been talking to about how straight women react to bisexual men and like how they can feel threatened or disgusted or something by that man's bisexuality.
Mary and I had a little bit of a disagreement about whether if you're experimenting with bi-curiosity and sleeping with people of different genders, whether you need to disclose that to the people you're sleeping with.
Mm-hmm.
Is it purposefully withheld?
Yeah. Yeah. If you're fully gay and you've never slept with a woman before, that's purposely withheld information, I'd say. And not for bad reason.
Yeah, you're going on like a dating app. I would say he doesn't owe her to disclose.
But this is interesting because I just don't know. I don't know if it's. There's like a slight problem for me. There's a slight kink, isn't there, in being like rolling over someone's boundaries because they are based on phobia. Are you not allowed? Are people that just because someone doesn't agree with our way of seeing the world, are they not allowed to feel uncomfortable about something?
What this situation is offering you as hypocrisy, because like she just meets him as a person, is sexually attracted to him, has sex with him, and nothing materially changes. You know, if you're going to be worried about people, past people that anyone has slept with, then you should be asking any partner you sleep with what their sexual history is. In this situation, you could just as easily say that he was violated by sleeping with someone he didn't know was incredibly homophobic.
Yeah. I bet his counter to that is that he was comfortable with her fetishization of him. Like, I completely understand why you would consider sexuality in a situation like that if it means that you're not going to connect with someone. But there is something complicated there, which is, then how offended can you be if when you do tell them, you discover like the fact that you withheld that information is a problem for them? Because you withheld it knowing it might be a problem. I don't think but that's like, mental. I don't think like...
But like...
Because I think...
I don't know. If you were to take this into like the hypothetical, if you were a person who was exploring bi-curiosity, thought they might be bisexual... If you're a woman, you're sleeping with a woman for the first time, would you say to them, oh, by the way, I actually have only slept with men before?
I probably would. And I think, I don't think you have to announce it on your account.
Yeah.
But I do think before things happen, someone normally says, when it's linked to any kind of first time, I
think that might be more common in like a queer space, but I definitely know people who haven't said that it's been their virginities that they're losing. Because it's like out of, maybe not embarrassment, but...
There's another thing which is like, there's a real benefit to disclosure on everyone's part about like things like that.
So, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree that there's a benefit to disclosure. I just still don't think that it's someone's duty to disclose. If you're having like safe sex and you're meeting for a night.
It's just really thorny. It's just really thorny.
And I guess the point of this show is so that you have conversations like that.
It's also just very, it's a really hard thing for me to empathise with the homophobia from the woman. I like really don't, like, I struggle to understand where that comes from in her. I just don't, I mean, like, as a bisexual, I'm like, bisexuality is fucking hot and I would fancy someone, a guy more, if they were queer and had slept with men. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. So what's interesting there is that we have two pretty famous pieces of art, one of which, Cock, looks at John's bisexuality from a gay male perspective and sees it as horrific and deceptive.
Yeah, because the woman's pretty chill with it. I mean, completely chill with it.
And then we have I May Destroy You, where Kwame's bisexuality, or bi curiosity, is seen as disgusting and abhorrent by a female.
Yeah. And I think that is pretty specific, I would say, to bisexual men. I don't think, as a bisexual woman, I have experienced that or heard of anyone experiencing that. No. Because, as we've talked about before, like, bisexual women are more likely to be fetishized. So the fact that you sleep with women is just...
Yeah.
Lazily, it's just, like, considered to be quite hot, isn't it?
Yeah, like, I would never hesitate to tell a man I'm on a date with that I'm bisexual.
But then I also think that is partly because men just don't see women as a threat.
Yeah.
And in these circumstances where women react like that, straight women react like that to bisexual men, I'm like, it's not the gender that you're seeing as a threat. It's, like, your own femininity that's at stake. Mm-hmm. Like, it is a sort of... I would say it's an example of toxic femininity, a classic one, I'd say, which, because it's basically about, like, the kind of femininity that polices other people to stay within those bounds and the kind of femininity that, like, has to be opposite masculinity in order to work. And so also in some ways builds up masculinity. She feels threatened by any possibility that she could be attractive to someone who also fancies men. Because that, like, wobbles her whole sense of who she is and what she presents herself as.
Yeah, absolutely. The question being, what's wrong with you that a bisexual man would want to be with you?
Yeah.
And what does that say about your inadequacy as a woman? And also, why would you find a man like that attractive? That's a heightened depiction of that situation for a TV show. But how does it happen in the real world? What's it actually like being a bisexual man dating women? Here's Matthew again.
Well, to be honest, most of my dating experience has been with men.
Matthew is more romantically interested in men, but is sexually interested in women. He admits that he definitely seeks out men more. Partly, I mean, mainly because that's his leaning, but partly because that's what's more available to him.
I almost feel like, are my photos, like, potentially too, like, queer-facing? Are they too, like, feminine? Are they too this? Are they too that? Because I often get, like, only male matches.
Right.
So I think even the times I've kind of tried to be a bit more, like, flexible romantically, or it's just kind of, like, not really worked. Or then I've, like, tried to be, like, okay, how can I, like, look more straight? Because I think that in itself is the thing that, I don't know, I think there is a big stigma around bisexual men amongst, I think, straight women, in my experience.
We asked Matthew if he has personal experience of a woman's homophobia in his dating life. And luckily he hasn't, but he sees it happen around him all the time.
I mean, in terms of, like, friends of mine even who've, like, found out that their partners are bi, or I think it's often, like, it sometimes feels like it's a complete deal breaker. I think some people see you being bisexual, like, or having sex with a man or being fucked by a man, being a less masculine role, which obviously, like, I mean, it doesn't make much sense.
And it's not just Matthew experiencing this. Here's Dee again. We asked them, do you tell the women you're dating that you sleep with men?
Yes, I tend to, always do. But the reactions then determine what I do. Some people will be like, that's disgusting. How can I trust you to be clean if, you know, if you're sleeping with men? Or how do you know if they're clean or so forth?
So what do you do if that conversation doesn't go well?
Early in my life, I would have incorporated the feedback and seen whether I wanted to make the relationship work on some defined set of parameters. And I would say, okay, so in this relationship, I'm going to be straight. But that doesn't work, because over time, you're repressing some part of yourself and some part of who you are, and you can't change that. All you are is now just less of yourself. And over time, that feels very restricting. And all it leads to is affairs. Now, in later life, I will say that actually I just do affairs. I don't tell the women. I have the conversation, I see the reaction, but then I will just behave as I am regardless. Monogamy is the most socially accepted, and weirdly, society also accepts the thorns. You know, humanity accepts affairs. Everyone has an affair. It's almost a tolerated part. And what I learned from my experience was, it's very hard having a conversation. It's very hard being accepted. It's very hard going through the navigation of trying to make a different relationship, a more progressive relationship style, work. But it's very easy to just play by the monogamy rulebook of what is accepted, including the affairs.
Hey there, you. You who's listening.
Life of Bi is an independent podcast. We're not paid by advertisers, and that means that we have the freedom to make episodes about the stuff that really interests us, with no one telling us what to do.
We do all the research, the writing, recording, and editing by ourselves, and then our fantastic sound designer, Tom Foskett Barnes, adds the effects and music and generally makes it sound professional. And that's it. It's just us.
So, if you are enjoying this podcast, and we hope you are, and if you'd see us in person and think, ooh, I'd like to buy them a pint or a coffee, then please consider paying us for the work that we do by becoming a patron.
You can find us at patreon.com/lifeofbi. Thank you.
So this week, while you were looking into lots of fun plays and TV episodes...
You were doing the dirty work.
I was doing some might say, pretty boring stuff. but I found it really fascinating. I was trying to find a study that looked into bisexual men and their relationships. I found a book by... a professor called Dr. Maria Pilotta Ciroli. She's a senior lecturer in social diversity at a university in Australia. And she is the co-author of the book Women in Relationships with Bisexual Men.
Love the clarity of that.
Yes. Title. I literally was like searching. And then I saw this book title and I was like, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
So it's a study on women ranging from the ages of 19 to 65 who have been in relationships with bisexual men. And
she, you know what the sequel to this book is?
Men in Relationships, Bisexual Women. And the third book, Non-Binary People in Relationships with Everyone. So in the book, Dr. Pilotta Ciroli outlines three common strategies by which people navigate life as a bisexual. So the first one is a strategy of passing, quote, getting the glass slipper to fit through normalization, e.g. silence, erasure, absence, mimicry and assimilation.
Wow.
The second is strategies of bordering through negotiation, balancing, weaving, maneuvering between the various worlds and the communities they inhabit. The third is strategies of polluting.
Oh.
Yeah. Being the stranger, the undecidable, through non-compliance, personal agency, resistance and politicization by letting people know about their bisexual partners.
Wow, I can't believe that one's title is polluting.
Well, she does note here, It must be stated here that polluting is used as a positive term of strength, agency, and empowerment, rather than implying negative, insidious, harmful, or underhanded machinations.
I would have just chosen different words.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, polluting. What would be
sounds
a better
fucking awful.
What would be a better alternative?
I don't know. Leaping?
Leaping is nice.
Fronting.
Exploding.
Yeah. Just not polluting, I'd say.
Confetti cannoning.
Yeah.
Now, I found this really interesting to read after the interviews we did, because I couldn't help matching up some of the situations that she interviews people in with some of the people we interviewed.
Yeah.
And her aim was to get a huge spectrum of, like, experiences of relationship. Now, she identifies two ways that bisexual people will reveal themselves in relationships. The first one is starting out knowing. So from the very beginning, you are out to your partner. And she posits that this creates the least distress. But it's also the most uncommon. So people are less likely to be honest about their sexuality.
When's this book written?
It was written in 2016.
Okay.
Yeah, so not that long ago. Yeah. So she says it's the least common way to navigate. Someone's had a beer.
Navigate.
So another study done in 2009 by some people called Piercy and Olson found that approximately 11% of heterosexual women in their study knew of their partner's gay or bisexual tendencies prior to the marriage or partnership. So 11% is obviously a pretty low number. And then this is, when I read this statistic, I gasped, which is out of those 11% in the same study, the 11% who were honest from the beginning of their relationship, they found that despite early disclosure and initial acceptance, 46% of the married respondents had divorced, 17% had remained married, and 12% were legally separated.
Yikes, fuck.
Now, Pilotta Ciroli does outline some reasons for this.
Yeah.
She notes that sometimes the initial disclosure is not explicit enough about the future. She speaks to women who thought, oh, they're telling me a thing about their past, which will not affect our future relationship. So to quote Pilotta Ciroli, this means there had been two times of disclosure, one at the beginning of the relationship, which had been discounted or rationalized away, and one later in the relationship when the partner discloses his ongoing secret intimacies with men. Often it felt as if the disclosure had occurred for the first time, replete with deception and hurt. Mm. And I think this might speak to D, our anonymous interviewee, because they said that they did disclose their bisexuality at the beginning of
at
a relationship,
yeah.
And then just carried on having affairs regardless.
If the reaction's negative, yeah.
Yeah.
Just learned that it's not really worth it. I wonder, like, how much of that is, it's super depressing that it's discounted, that first confession, as if, like, it's just going to go away.
Yeah.
I think it speaks to, like, a socially wide misunderstanding of bisexuality as something that, like, goes in phases.
Yeah, that this is my, because I'm with this person, this is their straight phase.
But then I also think it speaks to general fear about talking about another way of relating to each other. Like, I think this has also been changed a lot since 2016, actually. Conversations around, like, openness or more open versions of relationships or polyamory. Really, that if you're imagining a future with those people, really that's the conversation you're having. Like, it's sexuality followed hot on the heels by how can our relationship allow for this?
And I think often these early disclosures presume that the person being told this information will make a split decision, like a split second decision. And that there needs to not be any processing time. Whereas I know in your experience, you know, I don't know whether you're comfortable to speak about how you opened your relationship very slowly. It wasn't like straight away Eros was like, yep.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm down.
Yeah.
These things take time. And so the initial discussion isn't necessarily the be all and end all.
Well, that's what I found interesting talking to Dee, is because I thought, well, I understand where it comes from, because like, who wants to experience any level of disgust from someone that you're sleeping with?
Yeah.
Or biphobia or whatever. And particularly if you're accustomed to being shamed for your gender or your sexuality or whatever it is, you've really got no time to hear more of it. Mm. So I can understand why, if the first reaction you get is not positive, why you would not seek to have that conversation again.
Yeah, it's very painful.
But certainly in my experience, the conversation can change over time.
Mm.
And as you get like more stable in something, there is more space to talk about and more open setup.
Absolutely.
And so I did kind of think, listening to Dee, I was like, well, you almost don't give these people a chance. It, just as it's unfair to judge you on that first conversation, it is in some ways unfair to judge them, because they may never have considered their partner be bisexual before. They may never have considered openness, do you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And so everyone has to be given time to
work out how they feel. Yeah. Absolutely. Now, the second way that bisexual people might reveal their sexuality, if not at the beginning of a relationship, she calls it changing course midstream. from closet to confrontation.
Sounds like a really confused salmon.
And in many ways, that's how I feel. Flipping around, trying to make my way upstream.
Oh.
I actually am fine. Yes, from closet to confrontation. And she says, discovery is much more difficult than disclosure.
To receive?
For both.
Right.
Both are more difficult. Long run. She outlines some ways that disclosures and discoveries might occur. And actually, they're put in order of least stressful to most stressful. Shall I tell you them?
Yeah, please.
The first is, he voluntarily tells.
Yeah.
Second, he tells when pressured by his female partner's questions. Three, the female partner discovers incriminating evidence like a love note or gay pornography, confronts him, and then he reveals his same-sex desires or activities.
Yeah.
Four, he tells when forced to because of an arrest, job dismissal, or STI.
Arrest?
Well, this study was done in 1989 by Gotros. Five, the female partner is told by another person, sometimes the male partner's lover, and then he, quote, voluntarily tells her.
Right.
Six, the female partner is told in the presence of another person, usually a professional, after years of denying it, or she receives confirmation of her suspicions, but he never admits anything. And seven, the most stressful is the female partner discovers him in a homosexual act. And she has these interviews with women who that has happened to them. But, you know, there's shame on all sides there, because there's the shame of keeping it a secret because of the stigma that bisexual people have to live with. And there's also the shame of being cheated on.
Yeah.
So it's really lose-lose.
Do you think the fear from women is has also got like a bi erasure element, which is like you discover your, or somehow you find out that your husband's been sleeping with men, and your response is not he's bi, your response is he's a closeted gay.
Yeah.
And I've only ever been a cover, and he doesn't love me. It's a cultural responsibility, as in the fact that so many bisexual men feel that this is something they have to do is not an individual fault. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
It is a situation created by attitudes towards it. And I think there's a part of me which thinks, well, look, if you don't want your partner to lie to you, then you have to be open-minded.
Mm.
And you have to be really careful about how you respond the first time you hear something, because like, sure, you might not be expecting it, but we have to be ready to tackle our own prejudice. Otherwise, you're in danger of making someone feel like they can never bring it up again. And like, I would say that's both person's fault then.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to not feel a bit angry at the women that don't
accept bisexuality.
But then, like, all of these relationships are different, and presumably some of these women react by being like, you know, why didn't you tell me? It's not like I'm going to have a problem with it.
Yeah.
The issue now is that you've cheated on me.
Yeah.
And now I'm... Now I feel confused and angry, but like, had you brought it up before?
Absolutely, yeah.
But it does feel incredibly prevalent, this pattern that we're talking about of straight women having prejudices against sleeping with bisexual men. Does feel like really far-reaching, and I've heard about it before anecdotally.
Yeah.
And I do think there's something to be said for, like, there's got to be some responsibility taken by the women in these situations. If you really want honesty, you have to be able to hear it.
Amen.
Oh, Billy Brown had lived an ordinary life. Two kids, a dog, and then the cautionary wife. While it was all going accordingly to plan, then Billy Brown fell in love with another man. He met his lover almost every single day, making excuses for his dodgy holiday on some religion that he said he'd newly found. They didn't know that his faith was earthly bound. Brown, oh Billy Brown, don't let the stars get you down. Don't let the waves let you drown. Brown, oh Billy Brown, gonna pick you up like a paper.
Billy Brown needed a place somewhere to go. He found an island off the coast of Mexico, leaving his lover and his family behind. Oh, Billy Brown needed to find some peace of mind. And on his journey and his travels on the way, he met a girlie who was brave enough to say, when they made love, he shed the burden of his mind. Oh, Billy Brown, you're a victim of the times.
Thanks for tuning in to Life of Bi. We'll be back next month.
In the meantime, Life of Bi was made, hosted, and edited by us, Elle Potter and Mary Higgins.
Music, sound design, and production by Tom Foskett Barnes. Thanks also to our interviewees, Matthew, Dee, and Octavian.
And finally, shout out to our 8 new patrons.
Whoop, whoop.
They are Emily, Eric, Ram, Olaf, Eridan, Kimberly, Marissa, and Spencer. We literally could not be more grateful.
And if you want to join the cult, you can support us at patreon.com/lifeofbi. Love you, bye.
I just want to say
it ain't over till the bisexual speak.